Hello, and welcome back to HCP Live Podcasts. I'm Alex Hillenbrand, and today I'm joined by Howard Trachtman, adjunct clinical professor of pediatrics at the University of Michigan and an investigator of the Phase 3 DUPLEX trial, to discuss the recent FDA approval of sparsentan and what it means for the future of treatment and drug development in focal segmental glomerular sclerosis, or FSGS. We'll talk through the data behind the decision, the role of proteinuria reduction, and how this approval could open the door for future therapies in the space.
Obviously, sparsentan was approved by the FDA yesterday. As the first FDA-approved therapy for FSGS, what does this approval mean for the field and for patient care?
It's an important milestone. It's the first drug. Historically, FSGS has been like a graveyard for drug development. It's a difficult disease. Its outcomes are bad. And there's been really marginal understanding of the pathophysiology of the disease. So I've been at this for a very long time. And most sponsors are very, very reluctant to get into the space. Diabetic kidney disease just really dwarfed any activity with regard to the primary glomerular diseases. So the fact that people are finally paying attention to the disease, it's, even though it's uncommon, I hate the word rare, but it's uncommon. The health burden is enormous. So, and there were just no treatments, no documented therapies that people would rely upon, that they knew an accurate dosing, they knew the side effect profile, and they could confidently talk to patients and to their parents and caregivers and say, well, this is what I would expect to happen with this drug. It's just really a fantastic accomplishment. It's, you know, the drug itself, it's an interesting drug, to be sure, because it combines, you know, the antagonism of two pathways. But you mean in the work that people that I'm involved with, the people at Michigan, there may be people who have more pronounced activation of the endothelin pathway who may be really poised to respond even better than average. But this is a renal protective. It's a therapy that works in patients with FSGS to achieve an important biological effect, namely reduction in proteinuria. And again, and the last thing I think that's so important is that it was based on an endpoint, that the approval was based on an endpoint that really opens the door to engagement with pharmaceutical companies, so that they know that they have a measure of efficacy that can be considered by the regulators, so that as we, you know, really accelerate the scientific understanding of the heterogeneity of FSG, clearly more drugs are going to come to be to the clinic for testing. And this trial really sets a standard that it can be done.
Yeah, I mean, as you were saying, like, the trial opens up the door for FSGS and more drugs being developed and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the data that leads you to believe in this positive future for the field?
With regard to the drug per se, again, what it is it's a combination of the portion of the molecule that inhibits the renin, you know, the angiotensin type 1 receptor, coupled with the blockade of the endothelin. In and of itself, it's key. It's documented to be a part of the pathophysiology of the disease, and the fact that we know that these two injury pathways interact with one another, blocking them simultaneously with a drug that, based on the coupled experience of PROTECT and DUPLEX, has a reassuring safety profile, is really, really valuable. What the data show is that it causes an incremental reduction in proteinuria over and above what can be achieved with renin-angiotensin system blockade. Knowing what we know, that the data about the role of SGLT2 inhibitors in the context of FSGS is a little bit inconclusive, the elements of that renal protective box that can be offered to patients to lower proteinuria. And I think we're learning that the better you do as clinicians, lowering proteinuria, the better outcomes are for patients. So I think what we're seeing that what the data show overall, depending upon the different way that the FDA analyzed the data, about a 20 to 25% incremental reduction in proteinuria over the current standard of care.
Yeah, and as you've mentioned a little bit about the proteinuria reduction, which is obviously a key biomarker in renal protective care, can you talk a little bit more about the other clinical markers that investigators have seen with sparsentan, particularly in the context of eGFR slope and perhaps even long-term kidney outcomes?
It's a great question. I mean, in the context of DUPLEX, and the open label extension from DUET, the data would suggest that achieving these reductions in proteinuria at 2 years are clinically meaningful long term. What PARASOL taught us was that it was implausible to document clinically meaningful changes in renal function preservation in a 2 year trial. So with the DUPLEX data, all of it, whether it was the number of patients that have 40% decline in GFR, 30% decline in GFR, who reached the endpoint of kidney failure, all of these endpoints trended towards a benefit of sparsentan. None of them are statistically significant because the numbers are too small and the follow-up is too short and the disease variability. In the study, there was a modest reduction in the amount of GFR loss over the 2 year period. But I think that hopefully as a community, we can organize and make sure that data is collected post-marketing, the nephrology community. We get better at this. PARASOL shows that we actually can work together collegially and productively, that we can continue to monitor the long-term efficacy of sparsentan, showing that the proteinuria reduction, that the clinical benefit will manifest 3-4 years down the road in terms of preservation of kidney function, delaying the time that patients need to start dialysis or receive a kidney transplant.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for answering that question. As you know, and you're aware, the FDA had delayed its decision from January until now. What do you think ultimately tipped the balance towards approval?
It's a great question. That I can only speculate. Honestly, I'm as naive as you. I'm not in a black box. I wasn't privy to. I think really what it is it was a monumental decision. There were a number of factors that really were precedent setting, and the FDA, they're cautious. I've come to think of this, you know, there's this interface between law and medicine, and the FDA sort of sits in this as a legal authority in this. And there were two things that were unique. One was it's unprecedented that you submit your application to the FDA. You say, I'm going to judge my efficacy based on X, and then it doesn't work on X, and you change your say, well, I would judge it based, and that's really what happened here. The original efficacy endpoint was based on GFR, and clinical trial development process. And people thought in good faith, I was a part of those conversations where they thought GFR slope was a very, very meaningful endpoint, and they were. But it turns out that it was just impossible. It couldn't ever, no trial with a reasonable number of patients with a double-blind period of 2 years would be able to achieve its clinical endpoint. And so, was the FDA willing to say, okay, we're willing to rethink it? And the fact that they were moving the yardstick from a GFR endpoint, which was the standard historically forever, to proteinuria. These were two huge factors. And I think just that knowing that the FDA had to resolve those issues internally and how to grapple with this, was this going to influence their interaction with other drug sponsors? And then recognizing the huge unmet need in FSGS, balancing these concerns. And I think they looked at the data, they worked with the sponsor, I'm sure they worked with Travere and turned the data over as many times as they can to be persuaded that the reduction in proteinuria was biologically consequential and would have clinical impact enough to justify the approval.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for answering that. And I appreciate you giving me your perspective on that. I guess just kind of wrapping up the whole perspective and getting your insight on everything, looking ahead, and you did kind of mention this a little bit, what, as you know, like there are still plenty of unmet needs in FSGS management. So in your perspective, what are the greatest unmet needs that remain? And what do you think should be the next priorities to improving clinical care?
Again, a very good question. I think the most important thing is to enhance our understanding of the underlying mechanisms of podocyte injury and that lead to FSGS. We know that it's not a single disease entity, and it's a reflection of injury to the podocyte based on genetic factors, immunological factors, metabolic factors, and by different signaling pathways. And I think what the thrust of the research effort should be to improve our understanding of these different pathways, couple that with thoughtful, rational development of drugs that can target these pathways, and then making sure that we target the right drug to the right patient with FSGS, knowing that they're not all the same. They're subtypes, and we need to refine our understanding, our ability to resolve those subtypes, and then pair the patient with a subtype with the appropriate medication.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for answering that and all the other questions I had for you. But before I let you go, was there anything else that I didn't ask about that you felt was important to highlight or add?
I think the only other key thing is that this achievement of this approval of sparsentan really represents kind of like an important accomplishment in the nephrology community, where you really did have this alignment of all the critical forces. The patients were advocating for this. The doctors the clinical researchers were designing clinical trials that leverage the basic science. And I think this needs to be really like a model, a paradigm for how the community has to work together to address patient, listen to the patient voice. What are the priorities in terms of defining treatments? And then husbanding industry resources and coupling them with academic centers so the progress can be made. These are hard diseases to study, and cooperation and collaboration is going to be key to really move the ball forward consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to wrap this up. And I echo that sentiment for sure. Let's stop recording.